Now more Tune Up with Deb, produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George. Let's send it back to your host, Deb Ross.
My guest today is Peter Lewis. He is the Vice President of Sales for CST, which is the Canadian Scholarship Trust Foundation. Again, thanks so much for joining me, Peter.
My pleasure.
So just before the break, we were talking about the details of RESPs and the grants that are available from the government that are so helpful and motivating for families, both parents and children, putting money away for their post-secondary education costs, which are continually rising. So are there maximums that can be contributed to the plan? So are there restrictions in terms of the amount of dollars that can actually be contributed to each RESP?
Absolutely. There is a lifetime maximum. It's set in the Income Tax Act, and that's $50,000 per child that can be contributed into an RESP. What we find is very few families actually get up to the full $50,000, but that's the total maximum that you can put in per child that you have.
Okay, so you're mentioning the individual RESP plans and the group plan. Can you just explain the differences and similarities for the listeners for those different types of plans?
Sure. Individual RESPs and group RESPs are just kind of subsets of registered education savings plans. They all operate under the rules governed under the Tax Act. They all qualify for the government grants. Individual plans tend to be a little bit more flexible in terms of how you put the money in and how you take the money out. Group plans have a little more structure around them. Basically, your money is pooled and invested along with other families who have kids the same age as yours, and they have a disciplined saving structure where you're saving a certain amount over a period of time with the goal of ultimately your child going to school and then taking it out over a structured payout. The group plans have some additional enhancements that actually add value to them over the individual plans themselves. Individual plans, however, give you a little bit more flexibility. CST actually offers both types of plans, and we try to work very carefully with families to figure out what's the most appropriate savings vehicle that we can put them into.
Okay, so money goes in along with other families who are putting their money in, and then it's basically like an account or a pool where all the money sits and it's invested somewhere.
That's right. We invest through our portfolio managers. Money's invested really with a focus on preserving principal. Within our particular group plans, we are not the kind of investment manager that's looking to deliver significant double-digit positive returns, but it also means you don't have to worry about having negative returns. We're very focused on delivering a reasonable rate of return, kind of in the 4-5% range, but also making sure that your principal is protected so that you know that when your kids go to school, you don't have to worry about, is the money going to be there? You know it's going to be there.
I imagine that can be kind of an anxious question on a lot of families' minds. Like, what is this invested in? And am I going to actually have that money at the end of the day when my kids need the money? So can you give us some idea of what type of investments this money is actually put into?
Sure. So with an RESP generally, you can actually go to a number of different places. What we find, though, is a lot of families are more concerned about the security of the money that they're putting into their RESP, even though they might be about their own retirement fund, because this is about their children, it's about their children's future, and they don't want to take any risks with it. And so with an organization like CIA, Canadian Scholarship Trust, what we do is we have an asset mix that is designed to protect your principal, deliver a good, stable return over the long term. 70% or so of the assets are invested in government bonds, either federal or provincial government bonds, or in some financial institution bonds. And then the remaining 30% or so of the assets is invested in a number of types of ETFs that get us some equity exposure, but not enough that it puts you at risk. So it gives you a nice balance of being able to deliver a stable return over the long term, but at the same time make sure that you don't have to worry about your principal. It's there, it's going to be there, and it's going to continue to grow.
So invite us into your shop talk. What is an EFT or ETF?
Sorry, it's an exchange-traded fund. It's a specific type of way that you can get access to an equity, to a stock, but you can do it by buying. Basically, you're buying what's called an index of the fund. So an exchange-traded fund is just a cost-effective way of getting some equity or stock exposure in your overall portfolio.
So, but certainly the focus is reducing or at least mitigating the risk.
Absolutely. With our portfolio, what we do is we have a significant proportion of it, 70% is in fixed income investments, which provides us with that stability and that ability to make sure that we are not putting anyone's principal at risk. And the equity piece of it just gives us some diversification, which allows us to deliver, hopefully over the long term, that 4-5% stable return that we're targeting.
Perfect. All right, let's talk about when the money is ready to come out of the account. Johnny has graduated high school, and he is looking at going into university. What is the process for families to access the money that they have set aside?
Well, first of all, it's one of those most exciting times when we're dealing with families in that exact scenario because, you know, you've gone through this for 17, 18 years. You've been saving diligently. Your child's now going to school. And this is where dealing with organizations like CST or others who have that expertise can really come in to help because it's not the simplest process in the world. Essentially, what you need to do is you need to provide your RESP provider with some form of evidence that your child is, in fact, registered in a qualifying post-secondary program. Qualifying post-secondary programs, though, are almost anything that will be post-secondary here in Canada, and even some programs outside of Canada. But you need to get evidence of that your child is registered in the program. You need to provide it to your RESP provider. And then you have to make decisions around how you take the money out. We've got money in sort of three different buckets. You've got your principal, that's the money you put into the plan, and that's available for you to take out. You've also got the income and the grants, which are also available to take out, but you have to make the certain decisions around how you want to withdraw that money. With CST, we actually have a structured payout process, so we typically will pay out the income and the grants as the child progresses through the 4 years of their post-secondary education, and then the principal is also available to help when the child's getting ready to go.
So are there restrictions as to how much money comes out? Can they take the full 4 years of university costs out in one go?
There are restrictions. In fact, there's a restriction that applies to all RESPs, which is that the Government of Canada has put a limit on how much income and grant you can take out in the first 13 weeks of post-secondary studies. And they've capped that at $5,000. So in the first 13 weeks, you cannot take out more than $5,000 of income and grants out of your RESP. But after the 13th week, once you're done, those restrictions go away. So you can actually get access to whatever you need at that point in time.
Well, that's a lot of money, $5,000 plus, whatever is available to that kid going to university. And there are so many things to spend money on when we're in post-secondary education. So I think it's a good idea to have some restrictions in place. If the government doesn't have restrictions in place, I'm sure dad and mom have restrictions in place.
Well, and you know, the money that is put in, the principal actually comes out and is paid back to the parents. The income and the grants are, in fact, paid to the child, but only at the request of the parent. And so there's some controls around that because I know what you're saying. You want to make sure that the money is being used exactly what it needs to be used for, which is towards those costs of post-secondary education.
Because there isn't actually an accountability factor here, is there?
No, there's not really. You know, the income and the grants, as I said, gets paid out to the student. You know, I think the one thing that I would say is that we have found overwhelmingly that students are so grateful for the fact that their parents saved for them for this post-secondary education, and they're usually pretty disciplined about how they use that. But you know, there is a need for parents obviously to be involved and to stay involved as their kids go through a post-secondary education. It's also a great time, by the way, to have good conversations with your kids around their budget. How do they set up their budget? How do they manage their money? How do they make sure that the money that they've got is going to cover what they need for the term of their post-secondary education?
So what happens if my child is unable to attend post-secondary or just plain decides not to attend university? What happens to that money?
Yeah, that's the number one question we hear from parents. Parents are setting up these savings plans often when their children are, you know, 0 to 1 to 2. And so it's a big worry for them because, you know, it's 16, 17, 18 years down the road, and how do I know if my child's really going to go on to university or college? So a couple things. The first one I would say is that just the fact of having an RESP actually improves the probability of your child being able to take advantage of it. However, there are situations where kids, for whatever reason, decide not to go on. And within the RESP, there's actually built in some flexibility that allows you to do a number of things. One is, if there's other kids in the family, you can actually just move the money around between families and the children in the family, rather. And so, you know, if first child doesn't go, but the second child will, then you can actually just take the money that you had saved for the first child and you can make it available to the second child. So that's the preferred option. That's not always possible. So if your child doesn't go and there's no other option in terms of another child to move it to, the money that you put in, your contributions can always come back to you. When it comes back to you, the government grants in that scenario will go back to the government. So they take back their share of what they put in. You get back what you put in, and now you've got just the income that was earned on your money and the income earned on the government grants that's left in the RESP. And you can take it out in one of a couple of ways. One is you can actually just take it out yourself and pay taxes on it. Not a recommended option, but it's one you can do because it's not recommended because you pay it at your tax rate plus a 20% penalty. Or you can take the income that was in your RESP and you can transfer it into your RRSP, your retirement savings plan. And you can do that as long as you've got contribution room in the retirement savings plan. Or the other option that's not widely known and not used commonly is that you can also take the income, and if the child qualifies, you can actually transfer it into a disability savings plan for that child as well. So there's a number of ways that you can actually get access to the income. And so at the end of the day, there's really no loss to you through this process as long as you take advantage of one of those options.
Well, there's a lot of options in terms of withdrawing the plan. Now, is there a time frame where the plan automatically expires?
Yeah, registered education savings plans can only be open for 36 years from the time they're started. Now, I say only. What we find, obviously, statistically, kids are much more likely to finish their university or college by the time they're 24, 25. But you've actually got that buffer of up to 36 years from the start date of the plan. So even if you started the plan in the month your child was born, it can stay open until they turn 36 years old, which gives you ample time to be able to take full advantage of it. And so, you know, coming back to your earlier question, if the child is not going when they're 18 or 19 or 20, you can actually just leave the plan alone. And then maybe when they're 25, 26, they may change minds and go back to school and pick up the money then. So there's that as another option as well.
And that's exactly why I was asking the question, because oftentimes kids just aren't in that headspace to make those future decisions at 18, 19 years old. We need a little bit of life hitting us upside the head in order to realize that university was a good idea. So if parents can just leave that money alone, that, you know, there's a very good chance that they're going to come around.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I've really appreciated your time and your expertise, Peter. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And to my listeners, thanks very much for your time as well. And we'll talk again soon.
A half-hour financial advice program, Tune Up with Deb, is produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George. Deb Ross is an accredited financial counselor with Intune Financial Solutions in Prince George. Be listening for Tune Up with Deb each week at this time. For previous shows or more information on Intune Financial Solutions, visit intunefinancial.ca.